League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Squawker Talker podcast. This week, we're going to be diving into what was an incredible weekend of football and also looking ahead to an incredible week of football. It simply never sleeps. And joining me to do just that is Mr. Three Pens, Mohamed Butt over there.
Yes, I was taking notes. I needed three different colours to correspond to wins, draws and drosses. And also, football doesn't sleep, and neither do I, because I have a small child. Very tired.
No one is sleeping at the moment on the Squawker Talker podcast. Someone else that has been up for 72 hours at least. Will?
Yeah.
Welcome onto the podcast.
Thank you very much. Do I get a stationery-based nickname?
Well, I didn't spot any stationery at your desk because your laptop's covering it, so I couldn't think of any eagle-eyed observations about your setup.
Too much of a techie.
Yeah, too much tech. And someone with no stationery and two pieces of tech. Phone, laptop, that's all you need for the podcast, Mr. Sam Long. First experience of the new equipment.
Very good. A bit daunting.
Yeah. Imposing, isn't it?
It is, but yeah.
But conducive to excellent podcasting. And as I said, it was a weekend full, jam-packed of incredible football. And this week, we're not going to have any special bonus section at the end. We're just going to dive straight in, look at the big games, and talk about the big games that are coming up within that. But two teams that aren't playing this week, or at least aren't playing in the Champions League anyway, are Bayern and Borussia Dortmund, both knocked out. Strange to not have a German side in the quarterfinal, but when you see Bayern spanking Dortmund 5-0 in Der Klassiker, that is pretty scary stuff. And the stat that I've got to lead on this is it's now 11 unanswered goals Bayern have scored versus Dortmund in their last two home games. And it's sort of... the whole title race in the Bundesliga had been so close. And then this happens. Again, it was 6-0 last season, 5-0 this season. Sam, was this just a reminder that there is still a gap and have our Dortmund title hopes been crushed with this result?
Yeah, I think it does show that there's still clearly a big gap. Dortmund just got blown away. From the very first minute, Hummels with a header from a corner suggested that Dortmund were going to have a long afternoon, and that's how it turned out. It's a huge statement from Bayern going up against Dortmund and saying you're coming to our place, we're the champions, what have you got? Dortmund just didn't have the answers. And I think what's been really concerning for me after the game is the manner in which the Dortmund camp have come out and sort of addressed what happened. We were schooled, we've been taught a lesson. I just think it's really sort of negative message to be sending out. So the gap is obviously 1 point, but it just feels like it's so much bigger.
The last five Bundesliga Klassikers at the Allianz, right, have ended with an aggregate score of 22-3. It's not just at the 6-0 and the 5-0. They've Bayern since Pep's second season, I think they've just been absolutely hammering Dortmund there. I mean, the game at the weekend, I was so hyped to watch it, cover it. It's just, I'm thinking, okay, we're going to have a real title showdown here. And then it was like that bit in Gangs of New York when Bill the Butcher is like, you tell it off, for still my trophy chamber with their guts. You know, it's just, Bayern just destroyed them from the start to finish. Thiago was incredible. Hummels looked like Hummels from 4 years ago. It was suddenly, you know, Lewandowski's always looked brilliant, that's the thing. I mean, and, you know, Dortmund just looked like they really missed, I mean, weirdly enough, Hakimi, because of course it moved Diallo out to left back to cover for him, and Zagadou came in, and poor guy had a terrible game. I thought the biggest culprits were Zagadou had a bad game, but for me the big, real big failures were Witsel and Delaney, because this is exactly the kind of game they were brought in to sort of protect these young guys. They're the big strong guys in the middle, and they just couldn't get near Thiago or Javi Martinez for that matter. I thought Müller was played very intelligently in the hole, he really moved into space well. It was just it's just a beatdown. And then you look at what's going to happen in the summer. Jadon Sancho barely saw the ball. He's probably going to go in the summer. Man United seem to be coming hard for him. Paco Alcácer is not going to repeat what he did at the start of the season, where he was just obliterating his XG by scoring with every shot. you just can't help but get the feeling that they've missed their chance.
And Royce also complained about, I saw some quotes saying that, oh, Favre knows I don't like that position. It was obviously used as the forward because Alcacer has been injured. So he was obviously, he's not going to leave Dortmund. I think that ship sailed and he very much seems at home. But he was even annoyed slightly about playing that position. So without them still having this consistent striker, Pavard and Lucas coming in for Bayern next season, you saying that BVB have missed their chance. But I think Will, you still think there's some hope for Dortmund this season by looking at their running.
On paper, certainly. Just to pick up what Sam said and the mentality, sort of the fragile mentality that was kind of suggested by the post-match remarks by Dortmund players isn't a good sign, because on paper that they have a run in that would give them a slight advantage. So both Bayern and Dortmund should go on a bit of a win streak next, judging by who their opponents are. But then Bayern have got these really tough fixtures to end the season. RB Leipzig in their penultimate game, who are obviously the best of the rest, if you look at the table, they're the third place team. And then a narrative heavy game against Eintracht Frankfurt on the final day of the season. A lot will depend on where those teams are regarding their sort of Champions League qualification hopes, because, I mean, it's not really at this stage of the season about who you play. It's often about when you play them. Mm. If you come up against one of the teams right down at the bottom of the table, and Bayern and Dortmund have both got fixtures coming up against teams that would find themselves in that bracket, then that's probably going to represent a tougher test, a team fighting for their lives, than a sort of mid-table team who's pretty safe.
Roberto Martinez's Wigan can testify to that. Run. No, beating Arsenal and Spurs in that run at all. And
it's just that, that inch, that sort of...
Yeah.
When something's at stake, it just gives you that inch that you need.
It's the Albert Pierre speech, isn't it? The extra inch. Who's going to go at the season?
Two movie references in
more to
the
come.
First section's not even out.
Mo's been watching his films over the weekend when he should have been watching all of the football. no, but Eintracht Frankfurt as well could be looking to go far in the Europa League, so that is an interesting tie in itself. And Sam, just to close in on this section then, you look like you had something to say, and I'm just sort of going to throw it to you in the sense that who do you think will actually win the title from here on in? Is this 5-0 too damaging for Dortmund?
I think Bayern are going to do it now. I just think it's going to have been so demoralising for those Dortmund players to be out there for a full half chasing shadows. Bayern are now going to have their chests out for the remaining games. I think it's this. I mean, I really would have liked to have seen Dortmund do it, but I just can't see past Bayern finishing off the job now.
Once they're ahead, because they've been chasing for a while, drawing it back. And even last weekend, they drew and Dortmund won it. It was they're back ahead, just in time of the Klassiker. And Bayern Munich actually played a 5-4 DFB Pokal game on the Wednesday. Dortmund had a complete rest, and it actually looked like the rest backfired, because, as Mo said, they were quite slow in midfield. The Hakimi miss was massive, because when your centre-back's playing full-back, that's one of my biggest pet peeves, especially when you're... In a team like Dortmund,
really, attacking fullbacks,
So it was crushing defeat for Dortmund.
They just showed a bit of their immaturity as well, I think.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's what we do have to remember, is if they can keep the bulk of this side together, I think that's what Will was sort of focusing on. They're a young side, so they may have missed this chance, but you would hope that it's not their final one.
They'll have another chance in maybe two seasons, three seasons perhaps, because they'll always bring in new players. So even if they lose a couple this time around, they'll get more coming off the production line.
You look at the fixture list, as I was trying to sort of allude to earlier, and they have a really good chance of winning the title this season, but their form against teams like relegation candidates during this second half of the season has been arguably the reason Bayern are back in the title race. So you just can't.
You can't
put them down as guaranteed 3 points. Yeah, exactly.
Moving on from what is probably that and the Premier League is the closest title race. All of the other ones are pretty much wrapped up.
Yeah.
PSG could have won it this weekend if it wasn't for Eric Choupo-Moting somehow missing from a yard. It was bizarre. If you haven't seen it. What have you been doing?
Yeah.
But also, go and watch it.
It's pretty great.
One title race that was pretty much decided this weekend, and Mo's chomping at the bit already because you know what's coming, was Barcelona's 2-0 win against Atletico Madrid in La Liga. And for a game that for so long looked like it might have been 0-0, We were preparing so many stats. Oh, Simeone, 10 men. What a performance that is. Missed a clean sheet, yeah. But undone by Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez, who have now scored 53 La Liga goals between them,
yeah.
Which is only bettered by Barcelona themselves
and Real Madrid.
And Real Madrid.
By two goals. That's the absurd thing. Literally, Madrid are just two goals ahead of these two individuals. They've been... I mean, and to be fair, that speaks to how little Atleti have scored and how little Madrid have scored this year. Normally, they'd be much further ahead, but that's still very impressive. From Messi and Suarez. And it was twice in 1 week Messi and Suarez rescued Barcelona. Obviously against Villarreal, they got absolutely hosed because he didn't play Gerard Piqué. And you know, they were 4-2 down and they looked dead to rights. Messi shows up, scores an incredible free kick, and you know, had to come off the bench for that. Suarez had started. Suarez looked, for most of that game, after the first half an hour, it looked like he could barely control the ball. He wasn't running, he wasn't dribbling it well. It looked useless, and you're thinking, take him off. But then you never take Suarez off, because he's just, as much as he is past it, when you're world-class, you never lose the ability. You lose the ability to do it consistently. And he has lost that ability to do it consistently. But then, I mean, that goal was just amazing. It's Real, and you're thinking, okay, is he back? Is he going to come back into form just in time for Champions League? And then what happens against Atletico, again, not really playing too well, struggling. I mean, that's partly because Jimenez and Godin were just incredible in that game. But then pulls this moment out of the bag. I have nothing really. One step, he's just got a bit of space and he just bends the ball beautifully in this arc around Thomas, around Oblak. Oblak had been phenomenal in that game.
Eight saves, Oblak, mate.
Really, and all good saves. Really, really good saves to keep Barca out. And you're looking like, yeah, it was looking like, okay, Diego Costa got sent off very foolishly and insulted the referee and got sent off. And you're thinking, oh, he's ruined it. Because before that, it was actually this phenomenal toe-to-toe game where Atleti looked like they hadn't done it yet, but you can see that their intent was to actually really be a pressure on the counter. Mm. And the fact that Simeone, by the way, shout out Diego Simeone, because obviously normally his instinct is always to go defence first. And that's often, as much as it's Atleti's strength, it's also been his undoing. In the Champions League finals against Madrid and in Juventus, the elimination this year, he's gone too defensive too quickly and it's backfired on them.
Yeah.
In this game against Barcelona, Costa got sent off, he took off a right back, brought on a forward, moved Thomas to right back, and then later in the match took off Felipe Luis. So he had midfielders at full back, you know, box to box midfielders at full back, and he had three forwards on the field. He knew that the idea was to press Barca on the break. Now,
he's not playing. He had to win though, didn't he?
Yeah,
I guess. No. If in any other game, he probably would have taken the draw.
Yeah,
but then he needed to make the attacking change because he knew a win was.
Yeah, but it was so refreshing to watch though, just because they really went for it, and you know that they competed so well. Mm. Saul is phenomenal. Rodri is so good. They really, really gave Barca as much a battle as they could do. But in the end, I mean, pressure tells, right? And I mean, even with Coutinho stinking up the pitch for the last half an hour or 40 minutes he was on, you know, Barca still managed to find a way. And it's just, you wonder how many more gears Barca have to go to, because once Valverde starts playing Malcolm more regularly, or once Dembele comes back in, I mean, he's going to walk back into the 11 when he's fit. So you know, you wonder, like, you think if Man United, Solskjaer and Fiedler were there watching that game, they're probably thinking, oh, we can do this. But then Chris Smalling is not Diego Godin. So,
well, that's the thing, is the one part I wanted to focus on sort of from Barcelona specifically, or in the more general terms, that game itself was decided again by two world-class talents, yeah, which has been Barcelona's sort of story this season anyway. But Philippe Coutinho, obviously a £142 million man, or there or thereabouts, can't quite get the consistency. And despite everyone agreeing that he started that game quite well, when it was a toe-to-toe, more energetic match, he faded quite quickly and looked a bit slow on the ball, not as decisive as we saw, especially in that final season at Liverpool. And basically, your thoughts on the potential for this Coutinho transfer if he does decide to leave? I know he's said recently that Premier League returns not on his list, but at the moment, in terms of all-time poor pieces of transfer business, not because he's inherently bad, but because of how much they paid for him, is this Modric levels?
Oh, mate, from Felipe Coutinho is a world-class talent, but this is shaping up to thus far be the worst transfer of all time. He's the third most expensive player on the planet. And he's just absolute trash. He looks like he's bereft of confidence. He's got baby lungs, man. He plays well for about 25 minutes and then he's just out of puff. Like, I can run for longer than that, and I haven't exercised properly in ages.
You know, coming up next week, Mo tries to do 90 minutes of running.
Look, 90 minutes, no, but I can go longer than Coutinho, I'm pretty sure. Look, it's so frustrating because he's obviously a phenomenal player. That's never even for a second question, this guy can't hack it technically at Barcelona. He can. What it is, when he was having troubles this season, I was like, okay, it's a tactical thing because he was training all summer to play midfield and Valverde abandoned that after two games and put him out wide. And he's thinking, okay, that's fair enough, taking a while. But he's had loads of games to readjust to being a winger, which is his natural position anyway. And he just does not look comfortable at all, not on the ball, not off the ball. And when he does play well, it's only for 30-minute spells, and then he just seems to get tired and fade away. It's baffling to watch. But yeah, this is...
I'm not sure why, but people tend to sort of forget or overlook how much he actually costs. But when I hear you mention it there, Jay, it's crazy how much he costs. But I actually feel for him, though. I'm sure Liverpool fans won't. Will, you can probably attest to that. But it's almost like when Cesc went to Barca, because he clearly deserved that big move and it just hasn't quite worked out for him. I do feel for him a bit.
I think there's a reason people overlook the transfer fee, and that is because of the sort of Neymar tax that Barcelona were paying on it on top of it. I mean, we all knew how much money they had to spend. Their Neymar transfer fee was ridiculous anyway. And as we've seen, that utterly transformed the market. I think his issue was Mo sort of laid out there.
Is that he's trash, is what Mo is now.
Well, one of them was sort of like...
subtle.
Nicer things he had to say about him was that, well, he was gearing up to just play in midfield and at Liverpool towards the end of his time there, and he was playing his best stuff there. That's when... Because he was never like high-output player as a winger, like for the first few seasons at Liverpool. I mean, there was... continuous sort of criticism from other fans. He got slapped with the overrated tag, perhaps more than any other player about in the Premier League during his time in there. And then under Klopp, he really started to kick on, came back into midfield, and now he's trapped between two roles really at Barcelona. And what's happened to him is exactly what he said he was cautious to avoid. When these transfer links with Barcelona initially emerged, he said something like, "Oh, if you achieve success with a club like Liverpool, they'll give you a statue. If you do it at Barcelona, you're just like one of a sort of host of talented players." And I mean, that's not really exactly happening for him, but he's probably going to finish his time at Barcelona with more trophies than he won at Liverpool, which obviously isn't hard. Well, he didn't win any, but not really contributed an awful lot to them. I know Mo's got some views on that.
Coutinho, I think Copa del Rey has been his.
Yeah, I mean, look,
Coutinho del Rey.
He was very good in last season's Copa del Rey final, and on the route to the final, scored his first goal in the Copa del Rey, I do believe. He's done all right in the Copa this year as well, so he's contributed at least to the Copa, which is, I mean, it's not a massive thing. You know, he was okay. This is the thing, actually. This is the funny thing. You say this. Last season in like Barcelona winning La Liga, he did help a lot in the running, and this is why I think this season has been so confusing, because he started last half season after playing, you know, not playing for like a month or something with that back injury he had, or quote-unquote back injury. He was really good in his first half season. He was fearless. He looked like, okay, this is a guy who can step up and take control. And if Messi isn't necessarily playing his best, he can score goals. And then suddenly this season, it's all just...
Suddenly Ousmane Dembele was fit.
Well,
and that is the major question if we move this forward to the Champions League match now against Man United at Old Trafford. Dembele has been rumoured for the 2 weeks he's been off. It's almost mirroring Cristiano Ronaldo's injury for Juventus in the sense that, do we rush him back before, or do we save him for the Champions League? Because Dembele, for someone that, again, was almost labelled completely overpriced last season, he himself moved for 100 million, remember, was injured and didn't get much game time, but was pretty brilliant for the first half of this season.
Yeah.
One, does he come back into the side for Man United if he is fit? And do Man United have any chance of getting a result at Old Trafford?
I mean, honestly, I would say, first off, the first thing, Dembele, if he's fit, he walks back into the team, because Coutinho's just been so poor. The only reason why he might not play Old Trafford is because I don't know how fit he actually is.
Yeah.
You know, and with a hamstring injury, you never want to risk it, especially with the second leg at the Camp Nou. You know that Barca, United aren't going to turn Barca over, right? So even if United win, do eke out a win, it's not going to be a big win, so you can turn it over in the second leg. So that's the only thing I will say. And yeah, his return, his prominence. Like, this is the thing with Dembele. Like, he was struggling at the start of the season as well, but it was just because he wasn't playing. Whenever he played, he produced. And now then he started playing more and more. He's scoring big goals, can cross off either foot, can actually play that left wing role better than Coutinho, because he can go outside, be an outlet with his pace, with his dribbling ability. He's more of a suitable companion to Suarez and Messi. If he's fit, I think United will get absolutely destroyed, because I think Ashley Young is not good and Dembele is very fast, and I think Young will try and kick him to intimidate him, but I think it'll just take Dembele one or two tries to just blitz by Young, and then he's up with Smalling, who's also not good, and I think Suarez and Dembele will work together to isolate those two, and then there's Jordi Alba coming on the overlap. Basically, Man United's weakest area of their defence is Barca's strongest area of their attack, and Messi's just been pinging diagonal passes in there. So if Dembele's fit, I think United are going to get absolutely crucified. If Dembele isn't fit, Coutinho will probably play again, and Barca are very slow when Coutinho plays. Now, that's going to play into United's hands a lot, because they're just going to park the bus anyway, because what else can they do? And that might help United ease themselves, just stay 0-0, 0-0, 0-0, 0-0, 0-0, and then maybe they can ping one on the break, because Rashford is very quick.
So here are some stats that Man United fans will love to hear. Let's start with one that they won't love to hear. Lionel Messi has scored more goals against English clubs than any other player in the competition's history in the Champions League, with 22 in 30 games. However, and this is thanks to the Opta stats we were sent over beforehand, he's had 49 shots in his last 11 Champions League quarterfinals and not scored. And also, Luis Suarez has not scored in his last 16 Champions League away games. So if we learn anything from Atletico's performance against Barcelona, I'd say that Barcelona are relying on their own version of Jon Snow at the back to deal with any counter-attack and leaving Gerard Piqué to one or single-handedly deal with any attack. And when you've got the likes of Rashford, who is quicker than Griezmann and quicker than Correa, who Atletico Madrid used, Gerard Piqué might meet his match in terms of pure 1v1 duel, which Barcelona, from what I've watched in the season, and you will know much more, Mo, is their defensive structure is built on Piqué's ability to pretty much best anyone in a 1v1 situation when defending.
Yeah, he's the thing with Piqué is he's very, very smart at judging. I mean, not always, but like 99% of the time. Yeah. Very smart at judging what to do in duels. Sometimes he goes to ground too early and gets spun. But it's interesting, really, because the Clement Longley obviously is coming. Umtiti's been injured most of the season, hasn't really played. Clement Longley's come in, done a very good job. But Clement Longley's one weakness, one very, 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 very clear weakness is pace. Against Villarreal, Chukwueze and Ekambi just tore him apart. But Piqué wasn't there. Piqué wouldn't play in that game. Barca conceded 4 goals. Piqué came back. Barca shut down Atletico Madrid with 11 men, with 10 men. Piqué is not just that he does it himself, he also, like Van Dijk does for Liverpool, he organises the back line. The back line is better when he's there, both from set pieces and both from open play. Like Jon Snow facing down the army of the Boltons, you know, it's going to be like that. He'll just be standing there facing that whole, like, okay, guys, and looking around, and there'll be no one standing next to him, like, oh God. The only way that's going to really help Barca is if Valverde plays Semedo. Nelson Semedo, who is obviously, he's not a preferred choice right back because Sergio Roberto is so much better with the ball, but Nelson Semedo is actually a very good defender.
Mm.
And when he plays, Barca have a bit more defensive solidity, well, a lot more really, because it's not Piqué doesn't have to constantly worry about covering for him. He can just sort of focus on his own job and then helping Longley out. So a lot of the game is obviously going to be conditioned on, honestly, what 11 Valverde picks, because if he picks Coutinho and Sergio Roberto, you know, they're going to have a lot more joy on the break, especially running Rashford and Martial into the channel behind Roberto, because he always leaves space there.
Mm.
And then they're also going to have it a lot easier to deal with Coutinho. If it's Semedo and Dembele, then suddenly it's going to be harder for them to run men in behind Semedo. He's going to be able to handle that, or at least match them for pace. And then you're going to have Dembele just destroy, or maybe Malcolm, if Malcolm starts, you know, really causing that, you know, problem on that left flank. I think Piqué is phenomenal, one of the best, most underrated players, undervalued players around right now, really, because you don't watch Barcelona and think, oh man, that's great defending. You take it for granted, you know what I mean? But it's going to be fascinating watching him deal with Rashford in particular, because Rashford's pace is so electric.
We'll be coming back later in the podcast for predictions for Man United versus Barcelona and whether they will actually get battered. But one of the other big games from the weekend was Juventus and a 2-1 win against AC Milan, which was far from convincing, but it was that man Moise Keane again that comes up with the winner. He's scoring every 47 minutes in Serie A this season, which is the best goals per minute ratio of any player in Europe's top five leagues to have played at least 90 minutes in total. AC Milan's striker in form also was on the score sheet and has now scored double figures for both sides he's played for in his first season in Europe's top five league, which is, of course, Krzysztof Piątek, who is, it was actually a feature of the Skorka Talk now because we use his song for firing blanks. So good to see him on the score sheet again. But first of all, I think we need to raise the point about Moise Keane, because obviously we don't have a podcast in midweek. Bizarre comments from Bonucci during midweek about the racist abuse that Keane suffered against Cagliari. It was almost amusing to see the celebration of Bonucci when Keane scored the winner against Milan. Ran over to him, picked him up.
Yeah, he made sure he was the first guy there. He was very, very... That was very... I bet he sprinted like he hasn't in years to make sure he was the first one, and pictured on camera hugging Moise Keane, like, look, I like him, I'm not racist.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not even that he is racist or openly racist or whatever. We don't know. I don't know him. But the comments he made are indicative of why racism isn't actually just, oh, these people are bad and they because they're racist. Racism is a structural issue. It's a societal issue. It's bigger than any one individual person. Like The Help, that film, The Help, it lied to you. Racism isn't just about cruel people. It's about a society and a structure that perpetuates it. So the idea that Moise Keane taunted the Cagliari fans, no, he didn't. He just stood there and, in the face of their abuse, was defiant. Mm-hmm. And that is what upset, like, Bonucci's like, oh, no, you can't, because it's the idea, isn't, oh, you can't taunt racists, you should just ignore them and they'll go away. Like, we're not five-year-olds anymore. That's not how you deal with abusive people. If Stormzy calls you a prick, right, then, I mean, you can't be doing too many things right. But look, I don't know whether Bonucci is racist or not. I never met the guy. I couldn't say either way. But what he said was deeply structurally and societally racist. Like, that's, oh, he can't taunt the fans 50-50. No, it's not 50-50. Yeah. They're racially abusing him all game. And he did something very minor. The thing is, if he had gone up to them and screamed in their face, even that would have been justified just for what the abuse he had to put up with. You know, their reaction is constantly on trial. Like Raheem Sterling out in Montenegro did a very simple, like, what, you know, and that was a big, oh, what are you doing? Like, but I have to say, as much as England definitely still has a problem with racism, as Gareth Southgate said in that post-match press conference, it's not like it's just Italy. At least what you can say is his teammates and his manager supported him. Allegri made comments after the game like he shouldn't have done that. And again, it's not that these guys are like clan members or something, but they are participating in this idea and structural racism, that's the real problem.
And I think it was for the first time in what felt like a while, the reaction to Moise Keane, the first incident, was you saw the likes of Balotelli, as you mentioned, Stormzy there, getting colourful with their language, because it looks like people are finally sort of, it's getting put out there a bit more in terms of, even if it's just on social media. And then we had the Danny Rose interview later in the week as well about turning his back on football, not, or being impatient to turn his back on football because of the racist abuse. And it just speaks volumes. And again, I wanted to talk about, before we talk about Juventus on the pitch, I just felt like it was necessary for us to address that and say that it is obviously wrong. Moise Keane literally stood up in face of the abuse, and that's all he seemed to do. And it's a shame that he's not supported by his teammates in that regard, because what he's doing on the pitch as well is, and that is what I want to focus on the most, looking ahead. Obviously, deciding that Milan game, Napoli drew on Sunday, so Juventus couldn't clinch their title. Moise Keane, in the absence of Cristiano Ronaldo, has been doing exactly what Cristiano Ronaldo does for a living, or at least for the past 5 years, which is win games for his team. As I mentioned, 47 minutes per goal, win against Milan. But moving ahead towards their match against Ajax, Juventus have in what is my favourite tie of the quarterfinal, in all honesty, because Juventus have been tipped to win because they signed Cristiano Ronaldo, a man that they seem to be exclusively saving for the Champions League with that injury. Ajax became this weekend in a 4-1 win the first team, the first top flight team in Europe to score 100 goals this season. And they proved at the Bernabeu that they can score against any team, regardless of what you think of Real Madrid this season. Ajax tore them apart. And Dusan Tadic, who Matthijs de Ligt said is their own Cristiano Ronaldo, has directly contributed to 47 goals in 46 games in his debut season at Ajax. He scored 30 and provided 17 assists. So, with that as the backdrop, a teenage sensation for the old lady, potentially wanting to make an impact, against the youngest side in the Champions League this season with an average age of 24 years and 202 days. Is anyone else as excited as me about Juventus Ajax? Sam?
Definitely. I think the big talking point is clearly whether Ronaldo is going to be fit. Nedved said over the weekend that he really wanted to play against Milan, but they held him back. And now Allegri is suggesting that he is going to feature against Ajax. Of course, it's not surprising. That's Ronaldo's elite mentality. I think he said as soon as he was injured, he said, I know my body, I'll be back for the Champions League. But I think hamstrings, they're a really difficult one, because if he aggravates it now, then it could be cheerio for the rest of the season, which would obviously be a disaster. So Allegri has got a difficult choice in his hands, but I think if he's saying that he's ready for this one, that they should play him. Leaving out your best players can obviously backfire. Deciding which leg is more important is obviously a tricky one as well. But interestingly, De Ligt said that he wanted Ronaldo to be fit because he doesn't want any excuse. If Ajax do win, he doesn't want any comeback to say, oh, but you beat them without Ronaldo. But I think not seeing Ronaldo on the pitch will be a massive boost for Ajax. If he's not there, he's in the tunnel. Before, he's a commanding presence.
He is, for all purposes, Mr. Champions League recently, isn't he? The top goal scorer and won it.
Exactly.
And he's chasing Clarence Seedorf's record of becoming a player to win the Champions League with three different clubs as well. Seedorf, the only one to do that at the moment. And against Ajax, he has scored 7 goals in his last 4 Champions League games against them. Ajax would be fearful of that. They would be aware of that anyway. But it's at the Amsterdam, or Johan Cruyff Arena, pardon me, now in the first leg. And as you said, that's Ajax have reversed it before. They actually lost the home leg against Real Madrid and turned them away at the Bernabeu. So they won't be fearful of maybe disappointing in the home leg. So you could argue that it is the second leg that is most important in itself.
Juventus aren't, it's weird to say, because obviously they've got lots of star power, but they're not as solid as they look. Like, you watch them, even again in the last round against Atletico Madrid, they got really, really hosed at the Wanda Metropolitano. Like, if Atletico had just been a bit sharp with their finishing, they could have been well ahead. And had Atleti actually come out and attacked them in the second leg, I don't think they would have been turned over. The thing is, from the start, from literally the first whistle of that game, they were playing like there was 5 minutes to go. They had packed everyone back in defence, and that only emboldened Juventus, and then Bernardeschi had a great game, Cristiano did what he did. If Ajax go there with the same kind of fearless approach they went to Real Madrid, I think they can. Look, Man United have won it in the Juventus Stadium this season.
Yeah,
and Mourinho's Man United. Like, Juve, look, we have to remember this. Juve have Szczesny in goal, right? And I don't know. He's better than he was for Liverpool for Arsenal, but they still have Szczesny in goal, right? I don't think anyone's won the Champions League with a goalkeeper that bad since. I can't even remember.
That speaks for itself. I
literally can't. Who was Porto's goalkeeper when they won it? Vitor Baia. No, definitely not Porto. Exactly. So you don't win Champions League with goalkeepers like Szczesny, with all due respect. So it's
but you're doing it with players like Ronaldo.
But you can knock out Ajax.
But this is the thing, though. You know, will Ajax make them pay? You know, I genuinely don't know why this. What is the average age? What Jake said, 224 years, 204 days average age. Tadic is obviously elder statesman of the site, along with Lasse Schürrle, you know, two of the big heroes of the Bernabeu game. The older guys shepherding all these younger players through this, and you know, you've got De Ligt out to prove something. Frenkie de Jong, again, I mean, Frenkie de Jong versus Pjanic is going to be amazing. He destroyed Modric and Kroos. let's see him place as someone like Pjanic, who's actually in the prime. I mean, Pjanic got the assist on Moise Keane's winner at the weekend. Really good assist. So I want to see, I would love to see that Frankie versus Pjanic. Van de Beek, everyone forgets about Donny because he's not Frankie de Jong and he always pops up and does stuff.
That's Frank Lampard.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Everyone forgets about him. It's like Frankie. And then Donny's like, oh, I've scored a goal. And so it's
Donny on the spot is the headline.
That is outstanding.
I'll put that in the stat pack in case he scores. We could talk forever about this tie because you've got the young swashbuckling Ajax side against a team literally nicknamed the Old Lady. So the narrative is strong with this one. But before we move on to the other Champions League games, we're going to take a little quick break and we'll be back with Liverpool versus Porto. So in the complete reverse order of how the Champions League matches will be happening this week, we're going to move on to Tuesday's action, and the first one is going to be Liverpool versus Porto at Anfield, which was famously a thrilling 0-0 last season after Liverpool had already won 5-0 at the Estadio Dragão. But the one key thing for this game, and obviously playing it this way round is going to be different, is Will, the left-back you called the most important player in Europe, is going to be missing against Porto.
Alberto Moreno.
He's done the question for himself. Is that actually going to be the man that replaces him?
No, I don't think so. I think James Milner's input or contribution at I think he was on the right when he came on against Southampton on Friday suggests that, I mean, Klopp's backup fullback is a midfielder because I think he'll just be filling in there for Robertson, which he can do. I think he's created the most chances for Liverpool actually in the Champions League, but a lot of those have been from set pieces. Mm. So just having him on the pitch to be on set piece duty would be.
He wasn't at left back last campaign, was he, in the Champions
League?
No, Robertson was there, of course. But he's actually got 10 assists in the Champions League since the start of last season, which is more than any other player. So any excuse to get him on the pitch, surely.
Mm. Yeah, so I think he also filled in at right back on occasion in the Champions League last season as well. He certainly wasn't playing in midfield consistently, I don't think, in that one. But yeah, so it's the narrative was also strong with this one, really, because, I mean, there's a nice little parallel in terms of both teams going top of their leagues with a game in hand on Friday night. Porto won, but subsequently overtaken by Benfica. Both are missing key defenders. Pepe's suspended for Porto. Obviously, as we've said, Robertson's not there. Alex Telles might be missing as well, but I think he's back in training. So I'm not sure how likely that is.
He's another important left back.
Very, very important. A bit of a grudge match. As you said, the 5-0 defeat would have been particularly painful for Porto last season. I actually remember in that game, they didn't start too badly. There was some big chances for them in the first half that I think one just narrowly went over after a Dejan Lovren block. And also there's that Real Madrid element that constitutes a bit of a grudge for Liverpool in that I know Pepe wasn't really playing in that team, but you've also got Eder Militao going off to Real Madrid, so he might be inclined to try out his own little Ramos impression against Salah if he steps in at centre-back.
A chance to prove that he's worth 50 million euros, which is what they've already secured for him. Obviously, he's been sweeping up Player of the Month award for Porto's this season as well. But another player that is on the verge of being part of a very exclusive Champions League club is the Porto forward, Moussa Marega, who has scored in 6 consecutive Champions League games. The only people to have done it in 7 are Cristiano Ronaldo, who we mentioned, Ruud van Nistelrooy, obviously a prolific Champions League striker. I never realised how phenomenal his Champions League record is. And Edinson Cavani has done it in 7 games. But Moussa Marega can join that club and Will, again, we're coming to you on this for our Liverpool-Porto correspondent, if you will. Does he have any chance of making it 7 against this Liverpool side? Again, they're not missing Van Dijk this time, so you'd think that a centre-forward won't cause them too many problems.
I don't think he's going to have much of a chance to do so because I can see Porto, who have the best defence in Premier League this season, having conceded only 17 goals, which is also fewer than any of the teams in Europe's top 5 leagues, I think, as well, although, like the Bundesliga, they've only played 28 games. So I think Porto will take a similar approach to Bayern and in the home leg sit back And I think they'll probably be quite happy if neither team score. And then they'll go for it in the second leg.
Yeah. They've also got a contest with a front three that all scored 10 goals in the Champions League last season. Sadio Mane has scored in 7 consecutive UCL rounds. Salah finally broke his goal drought, so it's looking pretty scary.
But in their way, Iker Casillas.
Yes.
And who has not conceded in his last 3 games against Liverpool. He didn't play in the 5-0, and he kept clean sheet in the 0-0, and he's kept 2 clean sheets with Real Madrid back in 14-15. Last time he conceded was literally 10 years ago, in the round of 16, when Fernando Torres went kind of crazy at Anfield and Liverpool won 4-0 against Real Madrid, which was hilarious, obviously. But you just wonder, like, you see it, because obviously Casillas is having some sort of a career renaissance at Porto. He's obviously not as good as he was back when he kept those clean sheets, for instance, in 14-15. But you wonder if he could have, because, you know, he's the, not the original, but like, he's the big, the famous, like, miracle save man. Like, before De Gea was De Gea was Casillas, you know, so it was like, Casillas, he has these performances in him where it's San Ike, you know, he just goes crazy and just starts saving everything that happens. And I do wonder, like, could Liverpool actually come a cropper here? And then I sort of think about it, I'm like, probably not. But I think that's the only, with Pepe out, honestly, because Emile Militao's very good, but Pepe's savvy and his nous is...
That's a nice way to put it.
Yeah.
Pepe.
Yeah. Well, you know, back in the day, he was one of the best. I've never seen anyone defend Messi 1v1 the way Pepe used to be able to. So he's a phenomenal, phenomenal defender. Should have won the Ballon d'Or in 2016. You know, genuinely was the best player for Real Madrid as they won the Champions League, was the best player for Portugal as they won the Euros. He's a phenomenal player. You know, so his miss is huge, because even at his advanced age, the veteran savvy he has and the ability he has, the big match ability, the pedigree he has in the Champions League, what he can impart to young Eder Militao is invaluable. So missing him is going to be huge, especially if Alex Telles isn't going to be 100% fit either. That's going to really stabilise it, and it could literally need to be a San Ike performance to keep the score down, because it's very hard to look past Liverpool for this game, even with all the praise just heaped on Iker Casillas.
So as well, with Liverpool's midfield, which is the constant discussion, if Milner then moves in to that full-back role, Henderson might come back and be resurgent in his box-to-box responsibilities that he loved. And when I say loved, he loved that goal against Southampton that he scored. But they're matching up against Hector Herrera, is someone that has been linked with a move to Atletico Madrid with reports of their midfield exodus. And again, I know Hector Herrera was most likely involved in the 5-0 aggregate win last season, but with Liverpool's midfield being under more scrutiny, people like Herrera, who was brilliant for Mexico in the World Cup,
really brilliant,
might enjoy a little 1v1 versus Henderson and co. Will, I know you were going to come in there when
I was basically just going to say, I think that might have been why Henderson didn't play against Southampton, is because Klopp had this sort of reshuffle in mind. He knew he was going to be without Robertson.
So for midfield against Porto, do you think Henderson will...
I'm not even going to try and predict it. He chops and changes so much, but yeah.
Fabinho,
yes,
at the base, Henderson Fabinho in that base. Number 8. Because Henderson was talking, he said he had a discussion with Klopp.
Yeah.
And it was interesting, Henderson and Klopp have had those little moments on the touchline when he's been subbed this season.
Yeah.
They've obviously not been as bad as they first seem, but...
And you don't really expect that kind of thing from Henderson, which makes it more shocking.
Especially the captain.
Though, yeah.
Well, Klopp said that he's got the most difficult job in football in the last 500 years.
Yeah. He said he could write a 500-page book on Henderson or something, basically referring to how he sacrificed himself for the team. In a similar way to Milner does by playing that.
Chapter 1, how to pass sideways. that would be again, I've just sort of embodied the whole of Twitter in this one response. But it'll be interesting.
You're going to have the whole of Liverpool Twitter on you again.
No, because we're not going to put it on the graphic this time.
Yeah. I think he did say off air that the only player that's more overrated than Henderson was Van Dijk just before.
Yeah. I've actually got that tattooed. Yeah.
Sorry, it was Mohamed Salah who said that.
But he's back. He broke. And again, talking about people that love their goal, he loved that. And that was a Mohamed Salah goal, if there ever was one. Mm. One man counter attack. No real interest in passing.
No.
Despite Klopp saying that the angle was never there, I was quite confident at one point there was an angle, but he took the goal really well, put Liverpool back on top. Exactly the point of the season where you want him to be back in confidence. Henderson coming on, golden assist.
Yeah.
Liverpool, they never really were down, but that Southampton comeback win, I think, Sam, you pointed out this week as well, there's a stat about 23 points from losing positions. So Liverpool have got this fight on them, and people are talking about Man City quadruple. Liverpool are on the charge for a big league and Champions League double, which
European doubles, very good.
They you can't say they're bad. That's one thing you definitely can't say. But moving on to Man City there, the other game on Tuesday night, which will be three English teams playing on Tuesday night in the Champions League, which hasn't been seen for a while, of course. Man City have actually got no European wins against English opponents, and they travel to Spurs' new stadium, Sam, which Kevin De Bruyne doesn't seem to be a fan of.
Yeah, strangely, he's questioned the validity of being asked about whether it's going to affect the game. Pretty interesting take from him, given that City were clearly rattled.
You can't dispute what he said, though, to be fair. Everyone does have a stadium.
Yeah, true.
Actually,
facts only.
Actually, maybe not. Maybe some teams have played temporary stadiums.
Well, Spurs literally didn't have one.
Exactly. So it turns out you can dispute what he said.
But I mean, it could be to Spurs' advantage. Obviously, they're not going to have the whole opening ceremony, etc. this time. But at the same time, they could be unfamiliar with the surroundings. But to say it's irrelevant, I think, is very strange. And looking back to the first meeting between them this season, all the way back in October, ended 1-0 with Mahrez's early goal, the difference between the two. And I'm sure we'll all remember it was played on an absolute state of a Wembley pitch after the NFL game, and that sort of dominated the talk after the game, that it produced a rubbish spectacle because neither team could get their passing going. Obviously, that's not going to be the case at Spurs' new stadium. But I think if Spurs can have... Well, Spurs have essentially got two choices, I think. They need to either press high and try to force City to actually defend and sit back, absorb the pressure and hit them on the counter-attack. We know that option can be a success, having seen Liverpool and Lyon do it this season. But of course, it's very, very risky. Spurs actually tried it at the Etihad last season and made a clear effort to pin City back for goal kicks and lined up really, really high, but then came unstuck because Edison just bypassed it by passing over the top.
Edison, the Guinness World Record holder for longest kick, probably quite likes the challenge of not passing it short every game.
Exactly. So Spurs ended up losing that game 4-1. And in the two games that they played City since, Spurs have just come across as a bit insipid, just a bit... their performances haven't quite been there. And I think they need to focus on one or the other if they're going to have success. But then, with that said, City have got the knack recently of starting very fast and then being in total control of the game. There's going to be less necessity for them to do that, given that it's two legs. But if Guardiola does send his men out to start very fast, then it could force Spurs' hand. If they've decided that they're going to sit back and soak up the pressure, then that's going to be incredibly hard to do.
Well, Pep Guardiola is chasing the record for most knockout wins in Champions League. He's on 26. He can join the likes of Mourinho in 27. Obviously, he's got two legs to try it. Do you agree with Sam there, Will, that Spurs sort of have almost not known exactly which game plan to put all their eggs in against Man City?
Well, if it was me managing Tottenham Hotspur right now, I would definitely be going for the pressing option, because this is their best chance to capitalise on any fatigue within the Man City team. I mean, everyone is referring to the amount of fixtures the Man City have to play, but when you consider that the FA Cup final takes place after the end of the season, their fixture list, bar like one Premier League game in addition to what Liverpool's is basically the same, like, depending on how far they go in the Champions League. So, I mean, I think that's almost why they've been starting games so quickly and taking the lead and sitting on it, because they just have to conserve energy. They can't just go full pelt throughout 90 minutes. So that would be the option I go with there. I think this game is interesting in the context of this quadruple question that's continually keep coming up, and I do understand why it's being asked, because I think there's the stat is that only two managers have been at this stage in all of football history, basically, because of how there's more competitions these days, those being Jose Mourinho and Sir Alex Ferguson. So that's an achievement in itself to even be at this point. But one of the quirks of the football fixture list is that while we're in the end game in the Premier League and they're in the FA Cup final, The Champions League's really just getting interesting. Really, like they could get knocked out by Spurs, and it would be not a disaster of a Champions League campaign, but an extremely disappointing one. It's in the context of what happened last season to English opposition as well.
Well, yeah, quarterfinal isn't anything to.
No, it's not. No one's going to remember. Like,
to hang.
David Moyes got to the quarterfinal, wasn't he?
Yeah, nice. Which puts this into context.
Got knocked
as well.
Out, but he got there.
I mean, here's the thing, and got knocked out by Pep Guardiola. So yeah. This is the thing. I think, on the one hand, City are phenomenal right now. They've won 14 games in a row. They look really, really, really. I think they won like 7 or 8 games in a row before that previous loss. They're really good. They're a better team than Spurs. Spurs look kind of all over the shop right now. But Pep Guardiola is terrible away from home in the knockout rounds of the Champions League.
He's this is what the three pens were for.
Yeah, this is what the three pens were for. I've always known it. I had to literally just tally it up because I didn't actually have the. But basically, he didn't win a Champions League in his first 5 Champions League away knockout rounds. His first 5 away rounds, away Champions League knockout games, he drew them. Didn't win. Then actually, his first 6 didn't win. First 7 didn't win. Lost 2. He's only won 6 in all of his since the start. For the last 10 years, he's won 6. He's drawn 10. He's lost 9. Now, he's also, as Jake says, he's chasing the record knockout wins, which shows you that at home,
yeah,
he's pretty much invincible. But away from home, he's definitely. This is what I think. I do think Spurs will win this game. I think they'll go for it. I think they'll really press Guardiola. They'll press City. They'll find a weakness. I don't think they'll thrash them. I think it'll be a close win, but I think they will get the win. And also, I just think eventually winning runs come to an end. City are going to run out of steam. 14 wins on the row. You have to drop points. And if you're City, frankly, you want to drop it here at the start of a 2-legged tie where you can make it up in a second leg. And the last thing City needs to do is drop points in the league because then Liverpool are gone.
Yep.
So, I mean, not that you can engineer it, but if Pep Guardiola could engineer the perfect scenario, it'd be you lose here 2-1. Then you come back second leg and then you've got your loss that way and you can go on and win the rest of the games this season. I don't know if that's going to happen. I do think they're going to lose. I think Pochettino just has a very, very good habit of unsettling Guardiola's side when he plays with conviction. As Sam says, the last 2 games, they haven't played with conviction. They've been sort of like, eh.
Yeah.
Because their pressing game got sort of undone by Edison. I think Poch will figure something new out, whether it's new or maybe it's old, I don't know, but I think he'll figure something out and I think he will find a way to destabilise City.
Well, this is it. I think the best way to unstabilise him is to address Fernandinho, shake him off his game. But then it's how the Spurs combat that. Obviously, we've seen some teams have put someone directly on Fernandinho, but then who is it for Spurs? I'd probably argue it was Dele Alli, probably the best.
Dele Alli did it to Jorginho.
Yeah.
Who Man City identified. It was their analyst that came out and said Jorginho is their weak link. So,
not necessarily. I think he just said that he's got a tendency to jump out of his position and then he can catch them out. I know you were being facetious anyway.
That was the headline.
I'm just watching you back, man. Yeah, I don't want you to go through the previous.
I think pressing. I think one of the key, obviously, pressing Fernandinho is going to be really important for Spurs, and I think they will put Dele on that job because I think it's very important. It destabilises City massively, not mostly offensively, but defensively. It really messes with them because he provides so much with his way. He steps up and makes those cynical fouls and very little ticky-tacky fouls that referees never punish. He does like 50 in them a game and it really sort of destabilises the opponent, stops them from attacking. But the other key thing is attack. They've got attack City in the fullback areas. Walker, is he fit? Is he not? We don't know. Zinchenko, not going to be there maybe. Mendy is not the greatest defender. I mean, phenomenal going forward, my goodness. But, you know, at the back, there's weaknesses there. I think if Poch, I really would love to see Poch go with the diamond. And just split Son and I mean it would be Kane, I guess, but just split the forwards wide and have them run like United did to Spurs, ironically. Just have them fly in through the behind the fullbacks and into the sides because I think you can definitely draw out Otamendi. Definitely Laporte might be a bit harder, but you can definitely make a mug of Otamendi if you draw him out of spaces. And I think that's where Spurs can get some joy. I mean, City, if they get the ball to Bernardo Silva in dangerous areas, forget about it. But, I mean, you know, it's and obviously Raheem Sterling and Sergio.
And even De Bruyne, who we mentioned, having his little moan, has come back and looks quite impressive. So whoever plays for Man City, they have the depth of their squad is just the polar opposite to what Spurs have, really. So you don't know who they're going to play, but whoever they do play is going to be talented. But before we move on to the final part of the podcast, which will be giving our actual predictions for these games that are coming up, we've done this in the wrong way, and that's my fault. But one team that deserves a mention, and one that Man City will be facing, is Watford after that incredible FA Cup semi-final. And Will, you were touching on Man City winning a quadruple there, and obviously the Watford game itself is in the distance now. They've secured that fixture.
Yeah.
But Javi Gracia, obviously two Spanish managers going to head-to-head in the FA Cup final. Gerard De La Feu, who knows Pep Guardiola, is back. And just a thought on to Watford. Yeah. Could Watford and Javi Gracia be the team that ruins the quadruple dream?
I don't know. I don't want to detract anything because Wolves were really, really impressive, and I love they delivered one of the most entertaining semi-finals in the FA Cup in recent memory. But I would have almost felt less confident for Man City had it been Wolves who got through, because they're obviously the team that's just unsettled, the big teams. Mm. The first team to make Man City drop points in the Premier League this season, albeit through a touch of luck in terms of the refereeing decision.
A touch of hand.
A touch of Willy Bolly's hand. Yeah. They've got a really strong sort of team mentality there it's a bit of a cliche to turn to that sometimes, because it's one of those intangibles that you can never no one can really refute. But just with Gomez at the back and Deeney at the top, it's just that the team is sandwiched by sort of cult legends at the club. Yeah. And obviously Gomez is going to retire at the end of the season to become a pastor in Brazil,
intervention.
Yeah, the big guy in the sky will be looking down on Wembley.
It's funny you say about the intangibles there, and just Mo, before getting on to you there, just wanted to say Troy Deeney's interview was really powerful after the FA Cup, and Troy Deeney himself is that divisive figure, and sometimes he probably says too much. But he was talking about 12 years ago, he was paying money to play football, and now he's in the FA Cup final. So his journey as a footballer has been incredible. And he was saying, just it's not just as a footballer, don't give up, just dreams in general, don't give up.
And you too can smell Virgil van Dijk.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing about the intangibles, is he's almost the king of it. He always leads. He famously said about Arsenal having no cojones, which, despite Cojones themselves being tangible to an extent, in football they aren't, and it's not something that you can do on the pitch. But Deeney has laid down the gauntlet, saying this is Watford's time. Man City have had theirs, they can win the other trophies, but Watford will not be stopped in this quest. And it makes for, after what was an incredible comeback, remember he scored a penalty in pretty much the last minute.
That can be their nickname as well if they do win the FA Cup, actually. Like, you've got the Invincibles, they can be the Intangibles.
I think he really stitched up Dendonka as well, because it was just before the penalty was given.
Yeah.
Dendonka cleared the ball down the line, Deeney left a bit on him and then sort of got in his face and sort of urged him to get up. And then the next time the ball came around, Dendonka obviously had in his mind, I'm going up against Deeney, I need to put a strong foot in, and walk straight into it, gave away the penalty. Deeney absolutely...
He stitched up Jimenez as well in the post-match as well. He literally called him a loser.
Yeah. and he called out the atmosphere at the Man City game as well. He was gunning for everyone.
Look, as much fun as Troy Deeney is, right, since Pep Guardiola has taken over Man City, they have an aggregate score against Watford of 21-3.
Yeah.
This is the FA. Any hope of the FA Cup being an upset went out with Deeney's equaliser and De La Feu's winner. But it's going to be great to see De La Feu run up against Pep Guardiola. That was Pep gave De La Feu his debut back in 11-12, both his La Liga and Champions League debuts. De La Feu was obviously a very promising player at Barcelona, didn't really manage to make it. Phenomenal talent, as we all saw. That goal, the goal was beautiful. The first goal, absolutely stunning goal. So it's going to be fun watching him. I'm sure he might even manage to get back himself a FA Cup final highlight. It'd be immense if Deeney could score after his playoff, obviously in the playoff semi-final against Leicester. Of course, the heroic last second goal after Almunia's penalty save. That was amazing. And, you know, he could even top that. But 21-3. Yeah, it's City.
Although to note, it was Watford in the recent game against Man City at the Etihad. They just completely parked the bus.
Yeah, yeah.
Deeney and De La Feu came on and scored within 13 seconds of De La Feu came on and scored. It was one of the quickest substitutes. So you'd hope De La Feu will be hoping, especially that he will play for the Pep Guardiola reason, for the fact that he was benched for that semi final. But it's 1984. Watford, this is only their second FA Cup final in their history. 1984 was the last time, and it was Gomez and Ben Foster, the only people in the squad that were born when that happened, and only one of them can play. And hopefully it's Gomez because he's been there all the way.
But Ben Foster said, I think, on Twitter that he'd refuse if they asked him to.
which is typical of Ben Foster, who himself has been brilliant in the Premier League. So for a season, even Watford getting to that final has been incredible. And as I said, it was on my fault that they weren't mentioned right at the top of the podcast. But the discussion of that game was necessary. One, as you said, Will, one of the best FA Cup semi-finals we've seen recently. Had everything, including a mask, which, as you said, Deeney then said Jimenez was... He was glad
should,
he got
should
the
have
mask.
Worn out. Should have worn it out of the stadium,
yeah,
he said.
Yeah, that was...
Because now he's a loser.
That Pete Troy Deeney, and he'll be looking to... The build-up for that FA Cup final will be great, depending on how Man City's season goes. And on Man City seasons, we'll be taking one short break before we come back with the Champions League predictions for this week. To finish this week's podcast then, Champions League predictions. And we'll start in the proper order this time with Tuesday. And the first game will be Liverpool versus Porto at Anfield. Moussa Marega looking to join that club. Mane looking to continue his streak. Sam, I will start with you. What are your predictions for the Liverpool versus Porto?
I think 2-1 Liverpool with Mohamed Salah and his perfect nipple back on the goal track.
Perfect. If he gets out for celebration, that'd be great again. Will, are you back in the nipple?
God, how do I answer that? 1-0 Liverpool. I think Porto's defence means Liverpool aren't going to run up too much of a scoreline, but I do think they'll win, and Liverpool have pretty good defence as well, so 1-0. Low scoring affair.
I think Pepe being out and Mohamed Salah scoring a goal means that this is going to be flashbacks of 2008 for Kizzy. I think 4-0 Liverpool. I think they're going to put it to bed here.
Okay, so... Well, at least we got some different predictions for that. If anyone's interested in mine, I think it'll just be a comfortable 2-0. I like Porto and I like what the players they have, but I think the gap was clear last year. And Liverpool have just been so good at Anfield. So 2-0. And then the next Tuesday night game, we'll go reverse order, but me last again because I'm introing it. Spurs versus Man City. Mo?
I think City will play well, but I think Spurs will do something. Poch will pull something out of the bag that will be like, oh wow, he's doing that, it's amazing. And somehow I think Spurs will win 2-1. I think they'll get the win there. They won't win overall, but they'll get the win today.
Will?
Tomorrow.
For very much similar reasons, 1-1.
Fair enough. Short, sweet. Sam?
I think 2-0. I'm backing this one to be a real thriller.
A thriller in the new Spurs stadium. I've boldly put 3-1 Man City because I just think they're Man City and they're really good.
Yeah, cool.
Away from home in Europe,
fair enough.
Yeah, I know the stats don't back it up, but it's just, you know, sometimes
gotta go with
we've been
gut.
Talking about it so much, I just got to go with gut now. And Pep Guardiola equaling Mourinho's record would be, I think he wants to do that early as possible. Moving on to Wednesday then, the final two games we're going to predict this week. My favourite tie, Will, we'll go with you first on this one. Oh, Ajax versus Juventus.
I was hoping Mo would go first, so I could cough ears. I think it's going to be like a really demoralising 2-0 defeat for Ajax.
Oh.
Although they're going to play really well.
You horrible man. Similar to that would be similar to the Real Madrid game then.
Basically, which would bode well for the return.
Yeah, so Ajax, make sure you lose this one. Mo then, are you going to copy Will?
No. I think it's going to be I'm much more positive for Ajax. I think it's going to be a good old fashioned 2-2. A squawker talker special.
Yeah.
They're 2-2. They're going to be pulsating and fun and full of goals. And I think Juve will take a lead. Everyone will be like, oh, Juve are amazing. And then Ajax will just mug them off and equalise. And it'll be like, oh my God, it's back on.
Do sound special.
I think 1-1.
1-1.
Ronaldo with the goal.
Ronaldo back and Ronaldo scoring. I've gone for 2-0 as well, which is probably no surprise.
Yes.
That's my default. I just think a team that scored 100 goals, no matter who they play against, will score. As you said, Juventus don't look actually that safe, but they probably score a goal. And then the final game, and I'm going to save Mo's for last on this one because of what he said earlier about hammering. So it's a good note to finish on. Sam, Barcelona trip to Old Trafford.
I think Barca 2-0. United were really fortunate to get through, and I think they're going to get undone.
Jurgen Klopp. He said they were unlucky, didn't they? Sorry.
Yeah.
That came to me just at the last moment.
Oh my God, you are just alienating the Liverpool fan base, left, right,
no.
Right,
anyway.
Can I carry on?
Well, no,
try and justify it.
I agree with Jurgen Klopp. They were well lucky, weren't they? Man United, really. So I was just saying that, we can actually use a manager to say, to back up Sam's point.
Yeah, thanks, Jake.
Yeah. Come on then, Will.
I think 2-0 Barcelona as well.
No. After all that, he agrees.
Because of what Jurgen Klopp said.
Yeah. And to complete the set, I've actually put 2-0 Barcelona. So this is where, and to quote from earlier, I think was something like a battering, a smashing, a hammering.
Yeah, look, I mean, let's just keep it real. Yeah, Man United are not a good defensive team. Luke Shaw is okay. Lindelof's good. Smalling is a disaster. Ashley Young is an absolute catastrophe of a defender. David De Gea is not looking like he normally is. Luis Suarez is in form. Leo Messi's in form.
Despite the stats I met, so someone that called me out for ignoring stats.
Hmm. Yes,
Messi, well, 11 quarterfinals without a goal. Suarez, 16 away games without a goal.
Yeah, but they've always approached quarterfinals previously having been overplayed and looking tired. They don't look tired right now, which makes me feel worried for Man United. I think it's going to be a bad. I think United will score, maybe even score two, but I think it'll be like 4-2.
Also, Philippe Coutinho has knocked Man United out of Europe before.
He has indeed.
There you go.
I think he's saving his big goals for Liverpool in the semi-final.
Ooh, interesting. An interesting angle there. But we're getting way ahead of ourselves, as we said. It's just the first legs this week. I hope you enjoyed the deep dive into the football this week. Sorry for no bonus section, but there was too much to talk about. So that just leads me to say thank you to the guests for joining me. Sam, thank you for coming on.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for referencing a nipple as well. Not often you get them on a podcast. Will, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, sorry for not referencing a nipple.
No, it's fine. I've come to expect it from you. And Mo, thank you as always.
Thanks. I'm going to go to sleep.
Perfect. And thank you all for listening. As I said, we haven't had a review for quite some time, so if you can do it, please, because that means more people will be able to hear the brilliant Squawker Talker, including you, next week.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling Yuzu Mango IQ Mix Hydration Mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.